Chapter 9, The Emerald City and Beyond, Getting Your Entire Organization Above the Line. Turning to the Tin Woodsman, she, Glinda, asked, "What will become of you when Dorothy leaves this country?" He leaned on his axe and thought a moment. Then he said, "The Winkies were very kind to me and wanted me to rule over them after the Wicked Witch died. I am fond of the Winkies, and if I could get back again to the country of the West, I should like nothing better than to rule over them forever." "My second command to the winged monkeys," said Glinda, "will be that they carry you safely to the land of the Winkies, and I am sure you will rule the Winkies wisely and well." The Wizard of Oz, L. Frank Baum. The Tin Woodsman chose to share his newfound power with others. Such a choice represents the ultimate application of accountability, helping others in your organization move above the line. Regardless of your current position in your organization, you can begin to promote the Oz principle by encouraging people to climb out of the victim cycle and ascend the steps to accountability. The entire organization can benefit from what you've learned. Your superiors, your subordinates, your peers, and all the stakeholders both inside and outside your organization. In this chapter, we summarize 5 of the key activities that will substantially improve an organization's ability to create and sustain a culture of accountability. With these activities, you can build accountability into the very fabric of your organization. 1. Training everyone at every level. 2. Coaching accountability. 3. Asking above-the-line questions. 4. Rewarding accountability. And 5. Holding people accountable. These activities serve as the underpinnings to any successful organizational effort to create a culture of accountability. Throughout this chapter, we will review some of the best practices that people have put into practice over the last decade that will accelerate your transition above the line. Training everyone at every level. The first crucial challenge to creating greater accountability is training everyone from the boardroom to the mailroom to understand the crucial relationship between accountability and results. Quite likely, not everyone in your organization consciously appreciates that connection. However, once they do, they will much less often fall below the line into the victim cycle. To accomplish this shift in people's perspective, your training efforts must include 3 essential steps. Help people recognize below-the-line viewpoints, assist them in transitioning to a new view of accountability, and work to lock in the new above-the-line perspectives. Step 1. Understanding accountability in your organization. Before you can implement an accountability program in your organization, you must determine how people currently define and practice accountability. You should acknowledge that people view accountability in different ways and often not in the most helpful positive ways. Some people fear it, hide from it, or think it applies to everyone but themselves. Whenever you hear someone ask the question, "Who is accountable for this?" that's usually a clue that someone has slipped below the line. Consider the results of an informal survey we conducted to find out how people define accountability. Accountability is something that happens to you when things go wrong. Accountability is paying the piper. Accountability is reporting. Accountability is an explanation as to why you did what you did. Accountability is something management does to you. It's external, not internal. Accountability means reporting on actions, not results. Accountability is a negative concept to me. Accountability is burdensome. Accountability is a tool that management uses to pressure people to perform. Accountability is another word for punishing people for poor performance. Accountability is something that is put on you by your boss. It causes unnecessary pressure, fear, regret, guilt, and resentment. And accountability is something that nobody does around here. From such descriptions, you might conclude that accountability is a disease to be avoided at all costs. Obviously, such a negative view of accountability as something bad that happens to people when things go wrong can do little to motivate people toward results. When such a view pervades an organization, creating greater accountability must begin at square one, becoming aware of their divergent and often negative views of what accountability is and showing them how much time and energy they waste operating below the line. The Organizational Accountability Assessment can help you determine the current state of accountability within your organization. We suggest you quickly assess yourself before you evaluate your team or organization. Award the following points for each response: all the time, 5; often, 4; sometimes, 3; seldom 2, never 1. Then total up your score and evaluate your organization using the scoring table. Recognizing below-the-line viewpoints requires an awareness of what accountability really means and a recognition of the extent to which people throughout your organization operate below the line. Only by achieving this awareness can you expect to abolish negative views of accountability. Since even the most accountable organizational culture can fall below the line from time to time, everyone must remain keenly alert for the appearance of any below-the-line behaviors and attitudes. Step 2. Introducing a new view of accountability. It can take time for people to change their perspectives and adopt new attitudes and behavior. Embracing a new view of accountability within the organization sets the stage for moving the entire organization above the line. Only when everyone embraces the same positive perspective of accountability can the entire organization maximize its effectiveness at getting results. Having achieved awareness and recognition in step one, you can begin building above-the-line attitudes that will improve performance throughout the entire organization. Without this consensus of perspective, however, below-the-line attitudes and behaviors will continue to form a resistive force to greater accountability and results. Elements of the new view of accountability include understanding the victim cycle and its damaging effects, recognizing when they have fallen below the line, acknowledging when they have become trapped in the victim cycle, accepting the Oz Principles definition of accountability and the need to climb the steps to accountability, tying increased accountability to achieving organization results, knowing what it means to see it, own it, solve it, and do it, understanding what it means to work above the line, and accepting accountability for results as an organizational expectation. Training everyone at every level of the organization to understand accountability will create the critical mass and necessary momentum to influence organizational results in a major way. It requires more than lip service and an intellectual acceptance. It also demands deep emotional and psychological commitment. If you doubt it, recall the last victim story you heard and consider the emotional and mental stress exhibited by the person telling the story. Before anyone can personally transition to a new view of accountability, he must experience, as well as intellectually understand, the difference between above-the-line and below-the-line behavior and attitudes. Training sessions designed to help people experience and apply the concept of accountability, not just learn about it, are extremely helpful. Daily experiences, incorporating the principle of accountability into actual practice, will always provide the right reinforcement to the training, making implementation and execution a sure bet. Step 3, making the new view of accountability a way of life. To accomplish this step, you must constantly encourage people to make an all-out effort to operate differently, replacing below-the-line attitudes with consistent above-the-line thinking. Such a commitment tends to come only after deep personal reflection and a lot of thorough feedback. The reflection and feedback should help a person clarify and plan the specific ways in which he or she can think and act differently. Since feedback, more than anything else, will enable people in your organization to make the necessary commitment to stay above the line, you must learn to give and receive feedback in a timely and effective manner, a skill we will discuss in the next section on coaching. Before we explore that topic, however, we want to emphasize the importance of using the imagery and language of the victim cycle and the steps to accountability to enable people to reflect on the distinction between the two. Most people find it harder to think about philosophical abstractions than about concrete images. Therefore, try using the concrete imagery and language of the Oz Principle to help people develop a common frame of reference everyone can easily understand. The mere mention of the phrase below the line can immediately communicate someone has fallen into the victim cycle, while the phrase above the line delivers the message that someone wants to focus on results. Terms such as see it, own it, solve it, and do it quickly point to the attitudes and behaviors that produce results. Above the line can become a rallying catchphrase that signals to everyone involved that it's time to take action and make it happen in spite of unpleasant circumstances. With the concrete images of the Oz Principle, you can help every person in your organization search daily for ways to weave accountable attitudes into the very fabric of your organization's operations, performance appraisals, decision-making patterns, policy formation, mentoring, verbal and written communications, standard operating procedures, and every other aspect of day-to-day organizational life. Personal reflection and commitment, giving and receiving feedback, applying the language of accountability, and constantly looking for ways to inject accountability into every nook and cranny of your organization will ensure that people lock in new attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors. When that occurs, your organization will more likely achieve its goals and improve its overall performance. Coaching accountability. In our experience, no organization can consistently function above the line without constant feedback. Continuous feedback must become a living, breathing part of the accountable organization's culture. Throughout this book, we have emphasized the importance of feedback, but now we want to turn your attention to how you can and must incorporate it into an ongoing coaching program. When you decide to build an organization-wide culture of accountability, you must first create an environment where people on the team agree to provide honest, respectful, and timely feedback to help everyone recognize when they fall below the line and to help them take steps to assume accountability and quickly get above the line. The feedback need not be elaborate, but it must be clear, concise, and constructive. Think about the subtle or not so subtle difference between accusing someone of descending below the line and helping them see the value of ascending above the line. Take the case of Bill Hansen, a fictional manager who is representative of the typical manager we work with, who had experienced the accountability process and felt inspired to make accountability a core value in his organization. One morning he found himself in a management meeting where one of his peers, a fellow named Stan, was presenting a status report on one of his team's priority projects. As Bill listened, he concluded that Stan had gotten stuck below the line because many of his statements blamed others for his team's lack of progress on the project. Bill shifted his attention from Stan's explanations to the others in the room because he wanted to see their reactions to the report. As he watched the audience, he was surprised to see that everyone else was buying Stan's explanations for the team's poor progress. In the past, he realized, he too would probably have accepted Stan's below-the-line excuses, but now he found them quite disconcerting. Should he reveal his feelings? If he didn't, would anyone else question Stan's report? But if he did, would the other managers take offense? Pondering the personal risk associated with speaking up and attempting to pull the group above the line, Bill felt conflicting emotions. His own sense of accountability urged him to speak, while his sensitivity to the group cautioned him to hold his peace. Suddenly, he caught himself. I'm just as far below the line in my thinking as everyone else in this room. The company desperately needs me to speak up and accept accountability for moving us all above the line. At that moment, Bill began considering exactly how to raise the issue. Should he simply tell Stan that he thought Stan was telling a victim story? Perhaps that made sense, but then he remembered the training that had taught him not to use accountability as a hammer. As he continued reflecting on his predicament, he wondered again whether anyone would see Stan's report the way he did. If so, a lively and productive discussion might ensue. If not, Bill might more wisely coach Stan away from the eyes and ears of the others in the room. Just then, another colleague, Julie, raised her hand. I hear what you're saying, Stan, she said, and I know this project has been a bearcat, but I can't help wondering what else you and the rest of us can do to make it work. Julie's observations coincided precisely with what Bill had been thinking. He couldn't have put it better himself, and he immediately felt embarrassed for not speaking up earlier. Almost instantly, the whole room began buzzing with suggestions. Far from attacking Stan, everyone began lending him a helping hand and offering creative suggestions. To Bill's relief and chagrin, it turned out that most everyone else had seen the same problem he had, but only Julie had mustered the courage to act in her belief. Before the meeting adjourned, the president of the company singled Julie out for praise. She's shown the kind of leadership we desperately need in this company. Bill had learned a valuable lesson and would never hesitate to speak up again. Most people respond well to honest feedback, particularly when it comes from a coach and not an accuser, who offers it within the context of results and accompanies it with an invitation to provide similarly candid feedback. As you work on coaching others with prompt and candid feedback, make sure that you apply the steps to accountability to your own behavior. Good coaches always hold themselves to the same standards they apply to others. asking above-the-line questions. Throughout this book, we have stressed the importance of constantly asking the question, "What else can I do?" Now, we'd like to add several more vital questions that any employee, supervisor, manager, president, group, or team can ask themselves while inspiring their organization to greater levels of accountability. Above-the-line questions like these help flesh out the reality of a situation. You may want to refine these questions and add your own within the framework of the Steps to Accountability, incorporating our 10 and your variations of them into your ongoing efforts to think, behave, and work above the line. Our 10 questions are: 1. What aspects of this situation will most likely pull us below the line in the future? 2. What can we control and what can't we control in this situation? 3. Have we fallen below the line? 4. What are we pretending not to know about our accountability? 5. Which areas of joint accountability may allow us to drop the ball? 6. If we really owned it, what would we do differently? 7. Given recent decisions, what do we need to do to ensure the organization stays above the line? 8. Does anyone involved with this situation still fail to own the decisions we've already made? 9. Who is accountable for achieving the result and in what time frame? And 10. What have we learned from our recent experience that we can apply as we move forward? Use these and your customized list of above-the-line questions to review your progress and help you break through persistent problems. By asking these questions both individually and as a team, you will begin to talk yourself above the line. Clint Lewis, a district sales manager for Pfizer, working at the time in the Brooklyn district, found his team ranked last in the division out of 57 districts. As he met with his sales reps, he heard comments like, "I'm doing everything I possibly can," and "there must be something wrong with the numbers." Even Clint grew frustrated by an inability to turn the numbers around. He had picked up a copy of The Oz Principle at a local bookstore, and as he read it, he got to thinking, "Only if we can look at ourselves first will we have any chance of turning around these poor sales numbers." The book helped him to realize that by taking accountability for our own success, success will follow. Soon after, Clint began to use the concepts of accountability with his team at meetings and in one-on-one sessions. The team gradually began to change their mindset and then their approach to the business. "What else can I do?" became their mantra. A year later, the district made marked improvement in their sales numbers and their outlook on the future. Meetings became more positive and the team more optimistic. Each successive year, the team's performance dramatically improved, ultimately leading to the district's winning the top award in its division. Over the next several years that followed, the district never finished out of the top 10 in the division. During that time, Clint was promoted to regional sales manager and eventually to vice president of sales. What has been even more special for Clint is the fact that many of the original district sales representatives have since been promoted to positions of greater responsibility and leadership within the organization. "What else can I do?" still remains at the center of the culture of the Brooklyn District to this day. Rewarding accountability. Winston Churchill once said, "First we shape our structures, then our structures shape us." That's exactly how you create and sustain greater accountability. If you want accountability to become a lasting and important part of your own organization's culture, you must consciously foster accountability throughout the inner workings of every aspect of your organization. Even in this age of downsized, dynamic organizations, it's not uncommon to hear people say, "You can't go against the system," "Don't rock the boat," or "You can't fight City Hall." Those comments reflect an assumption that bureaucracy is so strongly entrenched you can't do anything but go along with the status quo. However, creating greater accountability mandates that you change the system so that it reinforces accountability at every turn. That's more easily said than done, of course, because an organization's culture can exert a strong influence on people's behavior. If the culture in any way, either formally or informally, accepts below-the-line behavior, that behavior will continue unabated. To get your accountability program off to the right start, you must begin to recognize and reward the above-the-line behaviors, attitudes, and practices you want to see perpetuated across the organization. While this sounds extremely basic, we've all too often seen organizations overlook the astonishing power of this management practice on shaping organizational culture. You want to ensure that you align the performance appraisal and promotion practices of your organization with rewards for above-the-line behavior. Even more importantly, you should strive to recognize all the day-to-day steps people take to move and stay above the line. One CEO we advised began devoting a half hour at every senior staff meeting to success stories from his vice presidents. He wanted to hear about his vice president's positive experiences coaching others to get above the line. The fact that he consistently spent time during important senior staff meetings to elicit these stories sent a message both to the staff and to everyone else who heard about the practice that the company really did value coaching and rewarding accountability. As a result, the senior staff improved its own coaching. This CEO had successfully spotted and seized an opportunity to reinforce and reward above-the-line behavior throughout the organization. In another company where we have spent a good deal of time, the senior team chose the regular senior staff meetings as the right place for recognizing and rewarding accountability. Each Friday morning, the senior staff would invite selected people from throughout the organization to attend the meeting and report on their activities. Those invited would spend a lot of time preparing their presentations in the weeks before the meeting, and after the meeting, they would engage their colleagues in a lot of discussion about how it went, who said what, who on the senior staff attacked the presenter, etc. This turned out to be a very visible and dramatic way to prove to the entire organization the top executives really did value above-the-line thinking. To their credit, the senior team knew that their own preparation for the meeting could make a world of difference. That required little effort, really, but it nevertheless represented a major shift in their thinking about their meetings. No longer would they just show up to hear and critique presentations. They would come fully prepared to use the steps to accountability as a tool to emphasize joint responsibility, detect below-the-line attitudes, coach the presenter, and most importantly, recognize, praise, and reward above-the-line accomplishments. Each meeting brought new opportunities to point out positive, proactive steps people were taking to achieve results, thus reinforcing the need for risk-taking, effective cross-functional coordination, problem-solving, and open and candid communication. The meetings even offered real-time opportunities for the top executives to coach one another above the line. On one occasion, Joan, the presenter, brought several members of her project team along to help with the presentation because her last presentation had sparked a lot of heated debate. Since she knew that some members of the senior staff thought her project was in trouble, she organized the meeting around ways she and her team could improve the project. After Joan summarized the project's status with a lot of charts, graphs, and statistical analyses, she invited questions from the senior staff. Joan was surprised when one member, Anthony, immediately dropped below the line and began blaming three people on Joan's team for the lack of progress. However, she was relieved when other members of the senior team pointed out Anthony's slip below the line, and she was delighted when Anthony quickly brought himself back above the line, focusing on what else people could do to get results rather than on why they hadn't already done so. Throughout the ensuing discussion, the senior staff emphasized the importance of joint accountability and then used the steps to accountability to assess the status of the project and to coach Joan and her team on working through some of the problems that plagued their project. Anthony himself shared an example of how he, too, had once been stymied by a similar problem, and he offered to share his experience in more detail after the meeting. In the wake of the meeting, the usual company-wide grapevine discussions continued to take place, and they took on an even more positive tone. No longer did anyone talk about what the presenter did wrong, but only about what everyone had done to speed the organization toward results. Stories also circulated about how senior staff members themselves displayed accountability at meetings. A potentially eroding experience had become a rewarding one for all. In addition to rewarding accountable behaviors, you can employ six additional culture-creating devices to instill greater levels of accountability in your organization. Six culture-creating devices. 1. Use trigger words. Trigger words such as above the line, below the line, and see it, own it, solve it, do it, can serve as behavioral cues for those who become familiar with the concepts of the Oz principle. The language associated with the steps to accountability and the victim cycle can trigger the right response in another person. One client used the four main characters from Oz to develop employee awards called the Ozkers. Employees who best exemplified see-it behaviors received miniature lions for their courage. Those exemplifying own-it behavior took home miniature woodsmen for their heart, while miniature scarecrows went to those displaying solve-it behaviors, and little Dorothy's went to those who best typified do-it. This became an annual event employees usually look forward to, not to mention one that kept the Oz trigger words alive in everyone's mind. 2. Tell inspiring stories. Stories about falling below the line and then getting back above the line can stir people's imaginations. Such concrete examples and anecdotes can make the point much more memorably than any amount of philosophical abstraction. You can use storytelling to clarify what it means to get and stay above the line, and to praise those who have done it. An engineering company organized brown bag lunches every 2 weeks to address the application of Oz principles into its daily work situations. Management started each brown bag lunch by asking the question, "What else can I do?" During the lunches, leaders and employees discussed problems and told success stories about seeing it, owning it, solving it, and doing it. 3. Manage by walking around. Anyone with supervisory responsibilities can use management by walking around, MBWA, to seize opportunities for coaching people above the line. Another client organized Oz SWAT teams comprised of managers and supervisors who would randomly visit employees to ask them what key results they were working to achieve and how they were stepping above the line to do so. Depending on the employee's ability to articulate the organization's expected results and his or her own activities related to those results, they would receive awards such as portable CD players, 13-inch color TVs, and DVDs. 4. Use the framework. In meetings, conversations, written correspondence, contacts with customers, and most all other business activities, you can emphasize the need for people to include accountability in all their thoughts and actions. One client developed SOSD, See It, Own It, Solve It, Do It plans to address pesky problems that the organization needed to tackle. The plans addressed issues of office morale, internal communications between competing departments, career path guidance, and other similar problems simmering below the surface and threatening to pull people below the line. Reinforcing the steps to accountability, these plans applied the Oz principle in a highly positive way. 5. Create role models. As we have discussed earlier in the book, you want to model accountable behaviors and attitudes. Always set an example for others in your organization and praise those who do likewise. Find and celebrate role models at every level of the organization. One organization implemented the Pinnacle Award to recognize individuals who achieved results by operating on each of the steps above the line. Award recipients became acknowledged as accountability role models throughout the company. And 6, create above-the-line experiences. Search for opportunities to give people new above-the-line experiences. Such experiences especially benefit people who anticipate below-the-line responses from you or others in the organization. Consistently creating such experiences will always move the culture toward higher overall levels of accountability. One restaurant company constantly graded itself on how well people practice the essential behaviors associated with each step above the line. General managers of the stores would anonymously submit their grades for both the store and the organization to the regional manager. Those managers, acting as discussion facilitators, would then review with their general managers in a group setting the obstacles the grades revealed. The group would thoroughly discuss how to overcome them. As a result of the program, this territory experienced large gains in productivity, and the program went from region to region until the company had established best practices across the board. By visibly and openly evaluating their performance, the management created the experience that accountability applied to everyone. Used together, these culture-creating devices can make a big difference in speeding up your organization's progress toward higher levels of accountability and, of course, more satisfying results. Holding people accountable. Think about the Oz principle definition of accountability. A personal choice to rise above one's circumstances and demonstrate the ownership necessary for achieving desired results. To see it, own it, solve it, and do it. Central to creating organizational accountability is the process of making, keeping, and accepting responsibility for personal commitments. In the end, personal accountability means that individuals choose to see it, decide to own it, personally work to solve it, and then individually commit to do it. In our work with organizations, we hear so much about making and keeping personal commitments. Those who honor them win the admiration of their colleagues. Those who shun or break them earn disapproval and anger. If too many fall into the latter category, that organization will suffer from disappointing results and endless rounds of the blame game. In the accountable organization, on the other hand, each and every individual honors his or her own personal commitments in a way that guarantees the best results. Many organizations we've worked with maintain lists of active projects that continue to grow while resources remain constant. While projects are added, nothing ever seems to drop from the list. In one instance, an organization found itself with such a bloated list of active new product projects that it was stripping the organization of the focus it needed to complete any of them. The unmanageable list of projects had unmistakably dragged the organization below the line. The very enormity of the task had sent people running for cover. Personal commitment? How can you commit to the impossible? Accountability looked more like suicide than a life preserver. As we recounted this story to the management team of another company, we were surprised to hear nervous laughter. They admitted with a chuckle that they could do our other client one better. They had 140 projects on their list. When we asked them why they let this happen, they observed that they just keep adding things to the list, expecting that people will figure out priorities on their own. The culture had developed an unspoken rule. I will support your adding projects to the list as long as you support me by not confronting me when I do not follow through on my growing list. A newfound awareness of the relationship between list-making and personal commitment enabled both of these organizations to replace the victim cycle with the steps to accountability. As they began weaving accountability into the very fabric of their organizations, people began to follow through on their personal commitments and shrink those ballooning lists of unfinished projects. It's important for people in the accountable organization to report on progress. As one leader observed, when progress is measured, progress improves. When progress is measured and reported, improvement accelerates. But how do you do this positively and not punitively? We've developed three helpful guidelines for holding people accountable in a way that does not punish people but motivates them to stay above the line. Guideline 1, clearly define the desired result. As we have said before, you can't create accountability without clearly defining results. You can't score a goal if you can't see the goal line. At this stage, you want to talk in terms of results, not just activity. People can easily confuse work with results, particularly when it comes to challenging results. Clearly define desired outcomes by specifically stating what rings the bell. Ask the people you lead to send you a follow-up note in any results-oriented conversation summarizing the results they expect to get. Guideline 2. Determine a mutually agreeable time for a progress report. When we follow up on people, we lift some responsibility from their shoulders. All too often, a leader will take primary responsibility for the reporting system, i.e., it happens at his request and as a result of his effort. However, when a leader encourages people to suggest the timing of progress reports, the reporting is a function of the accountable person's efforts and actions. In the typical cycle of making and keeping commitments, people think of the key report as the one they deliver after they fulfilled the commitment. But such a late report obviously cannot positively affect results. It can only stimulate a reward or a punishment. Have you assigned someone a task, saying to yourself, "Let's see what they can do"? Then, if they succeed, you look smart. If they fail, they look dumb. That's why we much prefer setting people up to succeed by making sure they suggest and accept intermediate reports both you and they can use to influence their progress toward results. When they succeed, everyone wins. Guideline 3. Deliver praise or coaching. This step is the perfect opportunity to praise people for progress made and results achieved with a robust "well done." It is also the moment for coaching when results are falling below expectations. During such coaching sessions, you might use the Steps to Accountability chart to make the discussion as concrete as possible. Warning: you must become an expert in asking the question, "What else can you do?" to make further progress toward the desired outcome. When leaders begin offering their own solutions or even solving the problem themselves, they remove accountability from those they're coaching. Avoid this temptation, providing instead the direction and coaching that will help people come up with what else they can do. We'd like to share with you one final example of how the process of holding someone accountable worked wonders. It's a true story. Picture a hospital administrator in a busy hospital who oversees the work of a nurse supervisor notorious for her escapades below the line. After attending the Oz principal training, the administrator challenged her to demonstrate a new attitude in her work. They agreed that she would report back at the end of her shift. This is an actual excerpt of her email to her boss. Instead of agreeing with the group and participating in negative thoughts, I determined to ask questions to redirect the focus. A new employee on Saturday stated that at 11 p.m. that she had had the worst night of her life and she felt she had no preceptor, i.e. supervisor, all shift. I wanted to go below the line and point out all the ways myself and the preceptor interacted with her. Instead, I walked away for 20 minutes, got my head together, and then sought her out. I asked her to talk about how she felt that night, why it was her worst night, and why she felt she had no preceptor. We ended up having a 20-minute discussion and both felt better. Later, I asked a staff nurse, "How are you doing?" She replied she was sick of things and was ready to walk out very soon. She said this in front of people. I didn't want to know what happened. After avoiding her for a few hours, I went back and said, "You seem frustrated. Would you like to tell me about it?" We proceeded to have a good conversation. She apparently had family issues and it truly wasn't related to work or me. Yes, I find myself below the line a lot, now that I realize what I am doing. For example, I used to leave certain charting things for the next shift to do, but now I am taking accountability for those things and getting them done before I leave. Assignments? I am able to direct others to talk about the change nurse if the assignment is difficult versus hearing them just complain about it. I was in a conversation with an employee where the employee was attacking me and my actions. My first reaction was defensive. I then brought myself above the line by actively listening and finding what the problem was and acted on that. I acknowledged that a staff member was busy and that it was a busy day. However, I initially didn't offer assistance to the individual. I reflected and then brought myself above the line by giving permission to offer help. The transforming power of accountability and the Oz principle helps each of us discover within ourselves the ability to achieve the results we want. Accountability, properly administered, can lift individuals and whole organizations to unparalleled heights. In every organization, opportunities abound for training, coaching, asking questions, rewarding behaviors, and holding people accountable. We suggest you pick one issue that currently beleaguers your organization. By selecting one key issue, you can more dramatically demonstrate the impact of greater accountability. First, list all those issues facing your organization that have recently caused at least some people to slip or remain below the line. Possible candidates might include total quality management, product defects, new product development, production schedules, people development, customer satisfaction, customer complaints, budgets, sales quotas, and company reputation. Be sure to identify major issues that relate to you and the people with whom you work most closely. Second, choose one of the issues from your list and then identify where on the steps to accountability or in the victim cycle you think you, your team, or your company currently stands. Begin discussing with your superiors, peers, and subordinates what realities everyone must acknowledge. See it. What ownership she must achieve. Own it. What possible solutions he can implement. Solve it. And what actions exactly everyone should take. Do it. Third, once you have started to create some awareness of your organization's position relative to this specific issue, decide on the right sequencing and mix of the five culture-creating activities for addressing this particular concern. Fourth, evaluate the success of your efforts both in terms of results and in terms of people's behavior and attitudes. After this experience, do you find more people in your organization more often thinking, behaving, and working above the line? Once you have completed your evaluation, pick another issue or move to a more broad-based approach to getting your organization to live above the line. Regardless of your next steps, you should remain constantly on the lookout for opportunities to expand the pursuit of accountability in your organization. Recall the journey along the yellow brick road. After the Scarecrow, the Tin Woodsman, and the Lion had mastered accountability for themselves, they found others eager to benefit from their personal gains. Likewise, as you work to keep yourself and others above the line, you will undoubtedly find more chances to apply the Oz principle to your organization's toughest issues, the subject of our final chapter. Chapter 10, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, Applying Oz Principles to the Toughest Issues in Business Today. Then the witch looked at the big shaggy lion and asked, "When Dorothy has returned to her own home, what will become of you?" "Over the hill of the Hammerheads," he answered, "lies a grand old forest, and all the beasts that live there have made me their king. If I could only get back to this forest, I would pass my life very happily there." "My third command to the winged monkeys," said Glinda, "shall be to carry you to your forest. Then, having used up the powers of the golden cap, I shall give it to the king of the monkeys, that he and his band may thereafter be free forevermore." The Wizard of Oz, L. Frank Baum. The lion symbolizes courage, and nothing tests your courage more than danger. To meet and conquer danger, of course, you must find the courage to take a risk, a calculated risk to be sure, but one that sets aside your natural desire for safety or comfort and your natural tendency to become a victim of the workplace. In his book, Technological Risk, University of California professor and risk consultant Harold W. Lewis argues that we have come to fear risk, and that fear, more than anything else, impedes a nation's or a society's progress. Are we over the peak in our willingness to take risks, which is the only reason we've evolved to the place we are now, he asks? While Lewis offers his observation within the context of technology, we think his message applies equally well to the softer issues that beset business organizations today. In our work with hundreds of organizations, from gutsy little startups to huge global corporations, we have observed that most of them will, from time to time, shun the risk associated with resolving a number of perennial and costly issues. Consider for a moment the top unresolved issues in your own organization. What would your list of issues include? How long have they bothered you? What specific steps have you taken to deal with them? The Latin phrase, est factum vitae, means it's a fact of life. In other words, it's just the way it is, and since you can't change it, you might as well accept it. Est factum vitae, the enemy of change, the number one foe of accountability. Unfortunately, many organizations have made est factum vitae an organizational mantra and applied it to those big problems that never seem to go away. Only by attacking and resolving these issues can you hope to increase profits, improve performance, and accelerate growth, not to mention make your company a vibrant and joyful place to work. Here's our own list of today's top 10 most threatening unresolved organizational issues. 1. Poor communication. 2. People development. 3. Empowerment. 4. Misalignment. 5. Entitlement. 6. Work and personal life imbalance. 7. Poor performance. 8. Senior management development. 9. Cross-functional strife. And 10. Programitis. These unresolved issues plague the full spectrum of organizations, be they nuclear power plants, financial institutions, retail outlets, insurance companies, healthcare providers, fashion designers, construction contractors, computer manufacturers, fine jewelers, schools, as well as the offices of doctors, lawyers, and accountants. In some cases, individuals perceive these issues as part of the inescapable reality of contemporary organizational life. Others dismiss the cost of remaining below the line on these issues as inconsequential. In our opinion, however, these problems are hampering organizations in their quest to become more competitive, more profitable, and more successful at fulfilling the dreams of their people, and more capable of achieving world-class results. In this chapter, we will take a hard look at these issues within the context of accountability and the Oz principle. While we can shed some light on them, only you can muster the courage to solve them in your own organization. Issue 1. Poor communication. Poor communication always stands in the way of results. it has appeared at or near the top of every list of what's not working in all the major organizations with which we have worked over the last two decades. Every day we hear people describe the lack of communication between employee and manager, between one function and another, between one division and another, between team members, between senior management and middle management, as an ongoing problem that impedes progress. According to Patricia McLagan, author of On the Level, Performance Communication That Works, an emphasis on accountability places even more importance on effective communication in the organization. As McLagan says, when you are accountable for the work you and your team are producing, you need to keep all the channels of communication open. You need information constantly on what is working and what isn't. Conversely, without good communication, accountability cannot flourish. From skyscrapers in any major city where people talk about the communication problem between the second floor and the 11th floor, to the geographically separated sites of headquarters and manufacturing where people just don't seem to connect, communication issues abound. We have heard people attribute their communication problems to such physical conditions as different floors, opposite sides of the same building, and even a single wall. But behind these physical barriers, we hear the hum of the victim cycle. The more people talk about their communication problems, the clearer it becomes that most of them feel victimized by them. They say they feel unheard, unlistened to, unacknowledged, and uninvolved, choosing to play the blame game and that others don't understand them, allowing them to duck responsibility. I am not responsible because I did not know, or they did not listen. Ironically, in this so-called information age, with all its high-speed internet connections, sophisticated telecommunication systems, and video conferencing capabilities, many people accept poor communication as an organizational reality they feel powerless to correct. Yet, as we hear those same people reflect on the price they pay for poor communication, it becomes painfully clear that they must risk something to change the situation. Otherwise, their organizations will continue to suffer the consequences of missed schedules, delayed products, wrong shipments, incorrect designs, and missed sales. While consulting with one particularly well-known high-fashion apparel company, we couldn't quite get this point across. Rather than face the danger directly, people preferred to wait and see if things would improve over time. Finally, however, when we ask a group of key people to quantify what poor communications with the management group had actually cost them, they concluded that better communication could have saved the company at least $3 million over the past 6 months. This number drove the message home. Now that the group could see it, they could begin working on the problem. To its credit, this group took action, but in most groups it's surprising how much talk and how little action surrounds a communication problem. One client CEO grew so exasperated hearing his management team talk about a vague communication problem that he issued an edict that no one ever again utter the phrase. Of course, that didn't work because silence would not make the problem go away either. He would have been much wiser to stimulate people to go beyond talking about it to doing something about it. Communication problems may be inherent in contemporary organizations, but that does not mean you can't tackle and solve them. In fact, if you leave communication problems unsolved, they will create habitual below-the-line behavior, employees who feel victimized, and a granite roadblock to accountability. What's the value in getting above the line and solving this problem? When Pfizer bought out Warner Lambert, the company wrestled with the problem of merging the operations of the two companies. In the sales organization, a multitude of questions arose. What should I do about email and voicemail? Who does my expense reports? How do I get my money back, and what about sales reports? The post-merger environment was a breeding ground for below-the-line behavior. Common complaints included, we should have had this already. This should have been thought through beforehand. This isn't working, and my new manager doesn't know what's going on. Every level, reps, district managers, regional managers, found themselves thrust onto a communications battlefield. Having adopted the Oz principle, the Pfizer team determined that only an above-the-line approach would help everyone take accountability for communication. When people ask post-merger questions, they were urged to ask another set of questions. What else can I do about it? And who else can I contact to obtain the information I need? By placing accountability with the person who asked the questions, managers created an organization full of people working to solve the problem, rather than merely complaining about it. Increased dialogue about how to operate post-merger actually helped reduce the amount of change forced on people because they came up with their own systems. When the Pfizer sales organization adopted several of the Warner-Lambert approaches and vice versa, both groups felt comfortable with a resultant mix of best practices. All this came about because Pfizer management demanded a healthy, robust dialogue at a time when communication and confusion could have paralyzed everyone. By creating accountability around communication, Pfizer estimated that they kept more than 25% more people than they would have kept had the problem persisted. The company reaped huge savings from reduced turnover and greater consistency in its sales territories. Moving above the line with respect to communication problems means that you become accountable for how you communicate with other people. First, you must see it, acknowledging the cause of a communication breakdown. Second, you must own it, determining what you are doing or not doing to cause the problem. Third, you must solve it, defining what else you can do to improve communications. And fourth, you must do it, committing yourself to action. While this approach may appear simplistic, we have seen it work. It's not magic, but we guarantee that it will set off a spark that can ignite a chain reaction as others join you above the line. Issue 2, people development. Most executives will agree that people are their organization's most important asset. However, it would astonish those same executives to hear that their people don't believe it. If communication problems rank number 1 on the list of impediments to organizational progress, then allocating the resources and taking the time to develop people comes in a close second. And if poor communication rankles people, poor personnel development enrages them. Rather than looking inside themselves for personal accountability in this area, people often blame their lack of advancement on the organization for not creating the requisite systems and programs. Quite often, the blame includes a lack of timely and comprehensive performance appraisals. Just as often, people find fault with their supervisors' inaccessibility, believing that it prevents them from getting and receiving the feedback they need to grow and improve. Inconsistent and unfair job posting practices and ineffective human resource support add to the long list of obstacles to personal development and advancement. Paralyzed by feelings of powerlessness, many people simply wait for future opportunities and hope that someone, someday, will ultimately award them with the promised promotions they think they deserve. On the other hand, we've also seen many individuals in a variety of companies climb above the line with respect to their development. One such individual, a highly qualified and effective industrial engineer we'll call Stuart, received accolades from management for his contributions. However, Stuart never could find a way to play a bigger management role at the manufacturing site he knew so well. After years of waiting for an invitation to move up and feeling somewhat victimized when it didn't materialize, Stuart decided to step above the line and actively pursue the opportunity. He made it clear to upper management that he wanted more management responsibility and that he had come up with ideas for what supervisors could do differently to heighten quality, increase efficiency, and improve their own management skills. After sharing that vision with his current production manager, he set about implementing it. Later that same year, when the current production manager accepted a transfer, management gave Stuart the job he had so long desired